PDOcast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me for a special immediately after the expansion draft results podcast, it's my good buddy, Ryan Lambert. Ryan, what's going on, man?
What's happening?
What's happening? Not a whole lot, other than it feels like this morning we woke up, at least I did here on the Pacific time zone, to just a tour de force performance by our good pal, Frank Saravelli, where he was basically just revealing every single thing that was going to happen tonight. And then we all tuned into the actual televised event, expecting that we'd find out there to be some sort of trades. And it turns out there has been nothing at all. So I have no idea why we just spent the past hour and a half watching that thing.
Yeah, that's about right. Although I will say I don't know the college football guy's name, but the college football guy being like, you noticed that the Maple Leafs haven't gone out of the first round in a while. That was fun. I don't know. You didn't have that up there, I don't think.
No, we did. They were simulcasting it on Sportsnet. Yeah, I think it was Chris Fowler. He was just like, he was doing the Steve Carell boom roasted thing where he was like, the Buffalo Sabres, a decade without the playoffs. And he's like, hey, just stating the facts over here. And I think he cited randomly that the Detroit Red Wings were like bottom five in goal differential or something last year. Like
he did say that.
It was beautiful. I love it. Also joining us on today's show, sorry for the delayed intro here. It's our other good pal, our coworker for both of us at EP Ringside. It's Jack Razor. Jack, what's going on, man?
How's it going, guys?
It's good. Well, let's get right into this then. So we're recording this right after the draft concluded. I think, the biggest complicating factor for us in this conversation is that it feels like, at least of now, we kind of have a bit of an incomplete picture of what Seattle is actually going to leave this draft with in terms of the treasure chest of assets. We know that, at least it seems like the insiders have agreed that there have been no trades in terms of like Carolina telling them to take Morgan Geeky and giving them another asset so they stay away from Jake Bean. But it sounds like there will be some trades once the trade freeze lifts on Thursday morning or Thursday early afternoon, where Seattle's probably going to trade some of the players they did take today to other teams for assets. So we'll see what kind of draft picks they get and all that jazz. But I'll start with you, Ryan, here. Where do you want to go with this thing in terms of your initial reactions of what they came away from this draft with, whether it was the right approach? You can take it any way you want.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were going to go pretty cheap. Like, everybody was saying that from the get-go, that they were going to try to go into free agency with as much cap space as possible. And when I put my team together, I put my mock draft of it. I was like, oh, wow, you know, you can get some pretty good players. You know, Niederreiter and Shane Gostisbehere, I thought, was an intriguing option. They were like, what if we went even cheaper than that? What if we took several guys that, you know, Ryan Lambert, a guy who I know a lot about the NHL. I feel like I know a lot about developmental leagues. And they were like, what if we took like three guys Ryan Lambert has never heard of in his whole life?
That was a direct shot at Carson Twarinski.
Yep, him and True.
Yeah, Alexander True is a big guy.
Alexander True, guy I've definitely heard of. It was just like, they went even cheaper than I thought. Like when I put my roster together, I was, I don't know, a few million bucks under the cap, like with all 30 guys, and they said, no, that's too expensive.
Right. Well, Jack, they, at least based off of Cap Friendly's current assembly of figures, looks like they've committed about $52.5 million in cap space to, in terms of NHL contracts, to 10 forwards, 7 defensemen, 2 goalies. They've got 7 RFAs in the way. Most of them are going to be pretty cheap, so I don't think it'll swing it too much. 2 UFAs, the rest on two-way deals. And so that gives them about, you know, functionally, let's say even in the low to mid-20s when they take care of a lot of those guys in terms of wiggle room with a full NHL roster essentially assembled. And that's much different than a lot of these other teams. You look at their current cap friendly figures and it's like, yeah, Minnesota also has $28 million or $29 million in cap space, but they have like 12 players under contract right now and are going to have to pay their two most expensive guys who will probably eat up most of that. So it's not like they really functionally actually have that much money. So it is, it puts them in a very unique position in terms of basically being able to go and sort of dictate the market in terms of not only the excitement of, oh, you get to be in this new market, and we're going to, it's going to be a fun story, but also we can pay you the most. Do you think that that is the approach here in terms of how they're going to parlay that? Or do you think it's going to be much more of this sort of slow build where they're going to try to weaponize it by either facilitating trades for others or, you know, eventually taking on some bad money to get future assets? Which way do you see them going with this?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I mean, you look at how this team was built. I think that they left a lot of guys on the table, like Niederreiter was mentioned, who I think probably could have gotten them some decent assets if they were going the kind of slow build route. Like, I don't really see a lot of guys on this roster who I think will return that much if they trade them. The one guy who really stands out is Mark Giordano, and they marched him out there in a jersey. So I feel like they're not going to turn around and send him to the Rangers tomorrow. I do understand the virtues of them going cheap. And I think I may have been a little bit more liberal with cap space than Lambert was in his mock draft, just because I figured that there were guys on the table who they would be able to flip who might have a higher price tag. But I mean, at the same time, like they went out there and they signed two free agents today to pretty sizable contracts. And those are the kinds of contracts that teams that are trying to compete at least somewhat would sign with Adam Larson and Jamie Oleksiak. And from all accounts, it sounds like they're going to be out there trying to get, or at least put their names in the rings for big ticket free agents. So it's kind of hard to really look at this team and figure out what exactly it is they're trying to do, because I mean, this roster doesn't seem like it's going to be contending for a Stanley Cup, even if they add Gabriel Landeskog to it. But, you know, at the same time, if they're trying to, you know, it really doesn't take that much to launch them up the standings in the Pacific Division. So I think that there's kind of a weird contradictory nature to how this team is built from my perspective, that I guess as free agency goes along, we'll get some clarity on what exactly this team thinks it is.
Yeah, I thought there was a nice sort of middle ground or hedge for them to go here with a lot of the picks in terms of, you know, Giordano and Yarncroc, two guys they did take, fit this bill. But I thought even JVR, although he has the second year left on his deal, or even Max Domi, who's currently hurt, but Nino, you know, Jason Zucker, you have a bunch of these guys who are certainly useful veterans who their current cap hits in this climate might be, you know, a tad high, and their teams would comfortably or gladly move off that money if they could. But for Vegas, they could bring them in. They could immediately be top line contributors for them. And then if things went well and they made the playoffs and were a great success story, you kind of ride that wave. But if things went south, like let's say they're an experienced goaltending, they come out of it with an 8.8 save percentage and they're suddenly losing a bunch of games, they can go ahead and retain 50% of that or whatever and flip those guys to contenders and get a bunch of those assets slightly belatedly back in return. And instead, you know, they took a couple of those guys, but it really seemed like that wasn't their approach or their direction in terms of taking shots on some of those useful veterans and instead going, as we talked about, the cheaper route. Like what they did with Philly was kind of the microcosm of this, where I really thought JVR, despite making $7 million against the cap over the next 2 years, was a worthwhile flyer for them to take and potentially either use or flip down the road. And instead they took this guy who by your model has a 1% chance of being an NHLer.
Yeah, I mean, like the thing about kind of going the youth direction is that just by the nature of the expansion draft, like literally by the rules of the expansion draft, like the young players that you have available to you are 23, 24, 25. You know, I don't see a lot of untapped potential in a lot of the guys that they took. And I was informed the opposite by many of the fans of the teams that they were taken from, because every depth defenseman and forward who's 25 years old is going to be a star in the NHL someday.
That's right.
But I mean, that's really the thing. Like I look at this roster right now, and with a few exceptions, I think that, you know, not to be, you know, too harsh or indelicate, but the vibe that I really get is kind of likable losing team. Like they're a lot more cohesive, I think, than Vegas were, like stylistically. Like they really went hard on these kind of low event, defensive, forechecking, hardworking, you know, like the kinds of mostly character guys who actually are pretty, you know, good at what they're supposed to be good at. There's a couple exceptions to that, obviously, but you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of fan favorites on this roster, and I think that there's virtue to that in terms of building a team. You know, like the Brandon Tanev contract might not be our favorite, but I'm sure he's going to play well in their market, and everybody's, you know, a lot of people are going to be super psyched when he runs around and hits some forechecks. But you know, it's cohesive, but it's not cohesive in a way that I think is really going to lead to great results right out the door. And you know, it's kind of with the lack of side deals reaping assets that we can get into in a second. You know, I kind of have a difficult job seeing how this team is really going to be built up from where it stood right now in a way that's not going to be kind of extremely painful and take a couple years.
Well, Ryan, I guess if you came away, not to be lazy and compare it to the Vegas expansion draft, because, you know, they had similar rules, but obviously I think teams approached it differently in terms of how they wanted to handle the transactions.
They didn't give Seattle a free top six forward. Nobody did that this time.
Well, certainly on paper. And what I was going to say was, if you left Vegas's expansion draft, you know, a lot of us were very excited about Shea Theodore, for example. We thought getting Alex Tuch was a really nice asset for them. But like, in terms of name brand value, it was like, all right, Marc-Andre Fleury, we've heard of that guy. And then there was a lot of players who obviously wound up, you know, stepping up in bigger roles, but also similar to what Seattle did here. And I think that was part of the thought process for them, or the guiding principle, was they had enough flexibility considering they didn't really take on any horrible contracts that were going to cripple them. They didn't have any baggage of past mistakes contractually, that they were able to basically year over year, or even months at a time, just keep upgrading and aggressively adding to their team. You know, whether it was even moves that didn't work out, like signing Paul Stastny or trading for Tomas Tatar, obviously getting Pacioretty and Stone and Pietrangelo, they were able to keep kind of upgrading and getting better and better and bringing in those big names and big contributors to put them over the top. For the Seattle team, they have that opening, certainly, both financially and also in terms of need. And they have a bunch of these, as Jack alluded to, kind of complementary, you know, hardworking defensive types that a lot of great teams would certainly need and also prioritize, but they don't necessarily have the, if you're looking at like the Tampa Bay model, it's like they literally have Yanni Gourde, but they have like the Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow types and all that good fun stuff, but they don't have the Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point, at least on paper here.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, who's Vegas or who's Seattle's William Karlsson, where, you know, he goes from like a third line role on a not very good team. And he scores 40 goals as a top line center in the first year. It's like, yeah, I mean, nobody would have said Bill Karlsson was that guy, right? Like, nobody would have said, if I'm looking at this roster, the guy I think is going to break out and just go absolutely nuts next season, shoot 25%, whatever it is, nobody with a gun to their head would have picked Bill Karlsson, right? So, you know, like, I can totally see a scenario where, like, Jared McCann goes nuts next season, and he's like a 30-plus goal guy and that sort of thing. But I can also see a situation where it's like, oh, no, everybody just kind of does what we think of them doing generally. And, you know, everybody's like a 20-ish goal guy, and they're not a very good offensive team, but they do seem to have, to Jack's point earlier, the horses defensively to kind of, you know, keep it low event, low scoring hockey and try to get a bunch of 2-1 wins.
Jack, when you put this list of players acknowledging that it could change, they could wind up trading some of them at the time of recording now, when you put this collection of players into your lineup builder, what's the projection in terms of the point output for next season?
I don't want to talk about it. I just tweeted about 5 minutes ago that the projection that it's shooting out is making me question the mechanics of the roster builder, because I just rejigged it about 2 weeks ago, and it's saying that this is a 100 point team, so that is leading me to believe that something must be horribly wrong. Or
I gotta think that's a Dreger thing, right? Like, they're just like, well, he'll just do it forever, 930 goalie or whatever he was last season, right? Like, that seems like it would be the thing that would be driving it.
Yeah, I did set it so that his results are kind of regressed back to the mean because of how few games that he's played. But I think that I would imagine that McCann and Blackwell are two guys who are driving it a lot, because those guys definitely had some PDO luck this season, some shooting luck that I feel like is probably getting overrepresented there. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, the one thing that I can take away from that before I completely dissemble the whole thing and turn it off and on again is that it does genuinely love the blue line. And I think that there is merit in how much it likes the collection of defensemen they've put together. You know, Mark Giordano is obviously on a downswing, but he's still a perfectly good defenseman and can probably be relied upon on a top pair. Vince Dunn, you know, we've been talking about for a couple of years as a potential entry in that kind of Devon Taves category of guys who maybe wasn't fully appreciated before and now in a new environment will be able to fully break out. And, you know, Adam Larson and even Jamie Oleksiak, who I think a lot of people are down on that contract. And I think that there's reason for people to be very skeptical about paying a defensive defenseman for 5 years on a deal. You know, both of those players have performed very well, specifically defensively in the past couple of years, and they project very well as a result. So I think to Ryan's point, you know, this is a low event defensive team. Presumably, if they're coached properly and based on what Hakstol said at the press conference, he said all the character-y, hardworking, forechecking stuff. So I imagine that's the kind of style they'll be playing. You know, this defense could definitely gut out a good number of wins, and it wouldn't surprise me, especially in the Pacific, to see them do well. But I wouldn't exactly be running to bet on this team finishing above 95 points this year.
I mean, yeah, it seems like it's certainly that didn't happen by accident, and they prioritize it. And probably some of it just has to do with the fact that it still is, you know, a bit of a market inefficiency in the league in terms of like defensive value and trying to quantify it and actually valuing that stuff appropriately with actual quantifiable results, as opposed to, oh, this guy is, you know, wins a bunch of faceoffs, so he's good defensively. I was ready to be high on this team's blue line even before we found out that Adam Larson and Jamie Oleksiak were going to be their two picks and the guys that they would sign during their negotiating window, just because I thought that if you look around the league, like most teams have one really good guy, maybe even two, and then it's like they're generally giving minutes to players who are either replacement level AHL guys or even worse. And for this team, it felt like they'd at least be able to just have six very, very solid NHL defensemen. And there's some value to that. And then obviously adding Larson and Oleksiak with their defensive results baking into this, it really put them over the top. So I think that is certainly going to be a big time strength of this team, and it's going to keep them in the game. And I wonder how much that tied into the fact that they also have, you know, we can talk about the goalies, but a lot of question marks and uncertainty, and they didn't invest a lot of resources into their goalies at all. And so if they're playing a lower event, you know, really high efficiency defensive brand of hockey, I imagine that kind of helps make it more palatable that they invested less than $5 million in their cap into the three goalies they picked here.
I look at this and I think the thing that you have to say is you have to view this through the lens of, is this team, you know, cup competitive? Or no, of course not. But is this team, if it gets a little bit of shooting / goaltending luck, is this team like potentially the second best team in the Pacific Division next season? Yeah, I mean, that's a real possibility. I think, you know, you go down, you go, okay, Vegas, fine. Edmonton is going with Mike Smith, Mikko Koskinen battery again.
Well, they just took Adam Larson from them.
And they just took Adam Larson. But like, you know, everybody talks about how good the Oilers were last year in the regular season. That was an aberration season from Mike Smith, right? Like, he's older than me and I'm 38 years old. So, you know, I look at that and I go, well, you know, the odds that they get that again aren't particularly great. And there's only so much two of the best offensive players in the world can do for you if you can't keep the puck out of your net. Calgary, Vancouver, LA, all teams with obvious roster flaws, serious questions that need to be answered this summer. LA obviously looks like they're powering up to do something, like they're going to start using their cap space and things like that. Okay, but I'm not and then San Jose and Anaheim, who cares? I'm not totally convinced that like this isn't just a team that kind of by default is like the third best team in the Pacific right now.
Well, Jack, 9 of the 12 defensemen they took are left shots. I imagine some of them will probably get moved. The three righties are Adam Larson, Will Borgen, and Cale Fleury. If only there was a right shot defenseman on the open market that could help provide the offense that this forward group might be lacking. Can you think of anyone that might fit that bill?
Oh man. I mean, honestly, if there was a forward group that would love to play with Dougie Hamilton, it would be this one. Can you imagine these guys chasing down those rebounds for 25 minutes a night? Like, that is basically a dream come true.
Well, you know what I was thinking? Sorry to cut you off, but just on that note, before I forget, I was thinking about this with the Mark Giordano pick here, because, you know, Dave Hextall, the last time we saw him coach an NHL team, famously ran like the most point shot heavy 5-on-5 offense in the league. And he's been the assistant coach on the Leafs in the meantime. And, you know, they last year, like, didn't shoot any point shots. So I'm not sure how much of that is it just a thing of the past, how much of that was a philosophy he genuinely believes in. But, you know, Giordano was a guy who was always like top five in terms of defensemen and just kind of spamming from the point. And man, would Dougie Hamilton love playing in that type of system?
I mean, would Dougie Hamilton love playing with Mark Giordano again?
Mm.
I mean, that's what everyone's talking about, how Dougie Hamilton, apparently, even though all the numbers say otherwise, just can't function out there without an amazing, you know, legendary defenseman next to him. I mean, he had some pretty good results with Mark Giordano. So I wonder if that might be a possible fit. I mean, it would definitely be, you know, it would make me feel a lot more comfortable in this point projection. But I, you know, again, it kind of fits into the broader picture of what exactly does this team expect to be? What do they want to be? You know, like, as I think that, you know, looking at this roster, how it stands, if they weren't going to be making, you know, a lot of big moves, and if they were going to be moving out guys for assets and not being big players for stars and free agency, you know, one thing that is definitely different for this team than when Vegas came into the league, you know, one of them is obviously what Ryan alluded to, which is that the Pacific Division is basically the worst division that we've seen since Ovi beat up the Atlanta Thrashers and Carolina Hurricanes for 5 years and, you know, about a decade ago. The other thing is that there is serious franchise level talent coming up in the draft in the next couple of years. You know, Vegas basically was staring down Nolan Patrick's you know, Rasmus Dahlin obviously was a little highly touted prospect, but I don't think there was too much hype about who was behind him. You know, Jack Hughes, these are guys who were hyped, but not at the same level as Connor Bedard and Matvei Michkov and even Shane Wright. So when I saw this roster, kind of the second part of me seeing it and saying, okay, well, like, this is a team that can lose respectably, is that, you know, if they either decide not to go the free agent route or they just strike out on the big names, you know, I think that they can kind of be winners either way in that scenario, because I think they can compete in the Pacific if they do get a big name like Dougie. But on the other hand, you know, if they don't, I think at least that it could help them build for the future and maybe be better down the line.
Well, Ryan, I've seen it's been kind of positioned as a lot of teams have been unable to be active over the past however long because, you know, they were sort of in a gridlock or a holding pattern because they were worried about the expansion draft and they didn't want to take on future commitments and all that. And I'm sure there was part of it in terms of making the protection slots fit and sort of minimizing your exposure to losing good players. But like, the flat cap was a thing heading into the expansion draft, and it's going to be a thing for the next couple of years. It doesn't suddenly go away now that this draft is over. And so I really did want to key in on how valuable an asset the flexibility they do have is, because I think it's sort of natural to, especially with expectations heading in, to look at this roster on Cap Friendly and say, this is pretty underwhelming. And I think all three of us, you know, the general tone is there's things we would have done differently and they could have been more ambitious and kind of recouped more assets from this process. But at the same time, the amount of flexibility they do have both in terms of actual dollars and in terms of how few sort of, you know, big money, long-term contracts they have on their books right now, really is something that if they play it right, can make an entire difference for this roster and for this franchise moving forward, if they are able to use it to get one or two or even more sort of big name players that suddenly sort of shift our perception of them.
Yeah. And the other thing too, we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but you know, I'm not totally convinced. Like the thing about, I thought they'd trade Mark Giordano to, you know, oh, we'll take a quarter of his salary, half his salary, whatever. And flip them to the Rangers or whoever else. That made perfect sense to me. But like Jack said, the fact that they put him in a jersey and sent him out on the stage, I don't think they're going to do that, right? So, you know, there are guys that they can try to leverage that kind of thing with. And like Yanni Gord, I think the fact that he didn't show up for this. I don't maybe want to read too much into that, but all the other big money guys, they got to show up. You know what I mean? So,
well, I imagine part of it was winning a Stanley Cup very recently. And the other part was, it sounds like he's having surgery coming up here soon. I wonder how much of that played into it.
I did not see about the surgery thing.
Yeah. Jack, he's out till like November or something, right? Yeah.
He's out till November. I think more entertaining. Like I think he had surgery 2 days ago, so it might not have been
good that'll
to
do
trot,
it then, yeah.
to trot him out with his arm in a sling in his
get excited defense. About the first season of Seattle Kraken hockey with this guy who has one arm.
Here's a guy who's going to miss a month and a half. Here we go, folks.
I mean, if they wanted a guy with one arm, they should have just taken Vlad Tarasenko.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah. The headline on The Athletic today was like chip on his shoulder or something like that, and I was like, uh oh, can they say that?
I think he has three chips on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And that is the issue. But yeah, so I don't know. I think the thing that I keep thinking about is, boy, if they like someone in who's a restricted free agent, why right. not, man? You know, like that's the thing I keep thinking about is like, they're so well positioned. They're going to get the second overall pick. They're going to pick Matty Beniers, I think is the general consensus there. And yeah, they're not.
Well, here's the thing. They have all of their picks, right? So they are available to offer sheet. I guess it kind of runs counter to what Jack was just saying in terms of the uncertainty of there's some great drafts coming up here and they might not be good. And
right.
committing future picks with that uncertainty with the star talent available in these next couple of drafts, I guess would give me a bit of pause to do
well,
so.
Well, I guess it comes down to who they would maybe be targeting, and again, like RFAs, whoever signs RFAs with an offer sheet in this league, like mm-hmm. it doesn't happen. So, you know, but I don't know if there's a guy coming on. I don't have a list in front of me, but if there's a good player coming on to his second contract, you know, he's like 21, 22 years old. They have the ability to really make it the other team think about it.
I can't imagine Ron Francis getting himself frozen out of all the Hall of Fame alumni dinners in the future. But I mean, that would be very fun if they just came in right away, looked at the Pacific Division and said, oh, we're not going to be picking top five for the next 5 years.
That's the other thing that I kept going back to, too, is like there's like kind of an artificial floor to how bad they can be built into it, because it's like, yeah, we got to play the Anaheim Ducks like 8 times next year. We're going to win a lot of those games.
Right. Yeah, there's a bunch of good RFAs, right? There's Elias Pettersson, which would be a tasty meatball for the Pacific Division.
Oh, can you imagine?
There's Kale McCarr. There's Andrei Svechnikov. There's interesting routes for them to go. What do you guys think is the best use of that cap space then? Do you think it is the RFA route? It kind of feels like a waste of time in this podcast to talk about it just because it's the NHL and it's not going to happen. And right. we should probably devote our time to more realistic blueprints for them. Is it getting involved in the trade market and potentially becoming involved in the Jack Eichel talks? Do you think it's dipping toes in the UFA waters? What do you think?
I think it'll be a little from the last two. I think they're going to sign a couple. Like, why, you know, apparently they have the green light from ownership to spend to the cap. Will they get all the way there? I kind of doubt it, but will they throw a bit of money around next week? Yeah, sure. Just having the ability to kind of be a team that if you're laundering cap money for a season, well, you know, now's the time to do it. There aren't like huge expectations on you and you can kind of see what you have and maybe get an extra first round pick for next season, that sort of thing. I don't know. Mm.
Jack, what's your ideal next couple moves here for the Kraken?
Yeah, I think that just anything that maximizes their assets is probably the best way to go. I mean, if they were unable to make expansion like side deals for, you know, expansion considerations, you know, that's obviously a lot of value left on the table relative to what Vegas was able to do. You know, like we said, there were guys who maybe could have gotten them a decent return as rentals either this year or next year who they decided not to pick. So that's just more assets again left on the table. So, I mean, looking at kind of this team and how it's formulated and the lack of kind of extra picks and prospects that they've accumulated so far, I think that probably the best route to go would be, you know, if they're doing the UFA thing, like if they want to be in on Landeskog and Dougie and all that stuff, it really should be kind of a go big or go home situation. Like there's, you know, they should definitely not be looking at, you know, your Philip Denos or Zach Hyman's or that class of UFA, because that just seems kind of doomed to launch them right in the middle of the Pacific for the next couple of years.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if they get Dougie, then great. That maybe speeds the process along and they can try to do something interesting short term. And if they don't, then I think that the cap space should just be spent on basically doing what we kind of thought they would do at the expansion draft, which is taking some bad short-term contracts to help some teams out of cap squeezes and getting some extra picks in return, because that is probably in their best interest moving forward to just get as many of those assets that maybe they weren't able to get early on and help them out moving forward.
Yeah, I really wonder, you know, on that note, how much of them walking away with this draft without any real Vegas-esque side deals was them asking for too much, because it did sound like, you know, the prices were pretty steep in terms of like, oh, give us a first and a third and we won't take Mark Giordano and stuff like that. And then how much of it was teams just being so hellbent on not being embarrassed by doing like bad trades with them that they were just like, all right, like just take one guy and we're not going to make the same mistakes we did. And if that's the case, then that might limit their ability to execute on stuff like that, even moving forward, even after this draft.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of strange because, you know, like you said, teams obviously lived through the expansion draft the last time. They saw what happened, they saw the result, and they were obviously going to learn for it. And then we heard at the same time that Seattle had, like, you know, was asking for double what teams were giving Vegas the last time around. Like those two things really never seemed compatible at all. Like it didn't make sense that teams would have learned from the last time but then decide to pay way more for Seattle. But all throughout this process, you know, we heard it like a year ago that Seattle would be asking for a lot of assets. And we heard it 2 days ago that they would be asking for like multiple first round picks for draft considerations and stuff like that. So those two things never really gelled in my head. And I think we were all surprised to see that there were no side deals happening. But I think based on the process that we were hearing about the entire time, it really shouldn't have surprised us that impasse was going to happen. And I think Seattle has, as you know, I think a lot of people are a little skeptical about the job that Seattle did today as a result of that.
Okay, let's take a quick break here, and then we're going to get into some specific decisions that were made on the other side of things. All right, I feel like we kind of set the table there in terms of, you know, expectations and next steps and why they did what they did. Let's talk about some of the specific decisions here. I'm not necessarily as keen on spending 20 minutes talking about why they took Cole Lind instead of Jonah Gadjewicz from the Canucks, for example. But I did think there was some interesting decisions that they made. So I'll let you go first here, Ryan. What, give me one that either, you know, you thought they'd do for sure on your mock and they didn't wind up doing, or even you can take it the other way and say, you know, you were pleasantly surprised or happy that they went the route they did because it was a good pick.
I guess I have two here, and one is Jared McCann, which I think that pick is interesting more for how it happened. That's obviously a player people like us, dweebs, liked for quite a while. And you know, I saw some people today saying, well, there's a reason he's on his, I think this is his 17th NHL team in his young career. You know, there's a reason why. And it's like, yeah, I see that, right? Like, you know, you can see where there's an argument that, oh, he maybe can't play up in the lineup, but then every time he does, he looks really good doing it, you know? And so I thought that was a really interesting, you know, like Toronto kind of daring. I mean, you couldn't possibly want Jared McCann. Look, Alexander Kerfoot, who's like, what if Jared McCann was like worse? He's right there. You guys want him, right? And Seattle was like, no, we want the guy who's the good version of the guy you said. And then the other one is Kelly Yarncroke, who's a player I've liked for a long time. And I, you know, he's one of those guys where it's like, wow, he's 29 years old, huh? That's wild. And that was more of a thing of, I kind of can't believe Nashville didn't really like go crazy trying to bribe Seattle to take somebody who wasn't him.
Well, let's hit both of those, Jack. As a longtime Jared McCann enjoyer, I'm willing to believe that he's not as good as you would think based off of looking at the metrics or the WAR models or you know, future projections. He shot 15% personally last year. He had an on-ice 515 shooting percentage of 13.6, an on-ice 515 save percentage of 931. Certainly made him look better than he probably is. At the same time, clearly a very useful player who can either play for you down the middle, which is obviously of importance for Seattle here, but also can bump it away and clearly has a good shot, has produced. Is there a weirder career trajectory or arc for a player than Jared McCann, where in 2014, he gets taken one pick ahead of David Pastrnak? Then as a teenager, he gets rushed into the lineups on this horrendous Canucks team and doesn't, you know, looks fine for a teenager, but doesn't necessarily have great results as you would expect. And then right after that first season, it gets traded for Eric Goodbranson, spends a couple years on Florida. They wind up essentially cap dumping him and Nick Bukes, had to get off of a bunch of money and take expiring contracts back in return. And then now he gets traded to Toronto, stays on the team for a handful of days. And then now he's off to Seattle. Like, what a, still only 25 years old, Ryan, as you mentioned, 17th team. Like, what an insane trajectory for a player who is good, even if he's not necessarily great, is clearly a good hockey player.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you that, you know, if you're just kind of don't know anything about the player at all, and you just look at his, you know, his metrics, you're probably not getting the right sense of him, because like you mentioned, on a shooting percentage off the charts. You know, he was playing with Jeff Carter when Jeff Carter scored 50 goals in 5 games for the Pittsburgh Penguins this season.
And that was all because of Jared McCann. So
yeah, exactly. You know, he for, you know, like, I think he's like, he was like second in goals above replacement for 60 or something this year. I saw a lot of Penguins fans angrily citing that. And, you know, again, that's on ice shooting. I wouldn't read too much into that. You know, the fact of the matter is that the guy that Jared McCann is a perfectly good middle six defense first, you know, center slash winger who almost always eventually ends up being put on the wing. And I feel like that's probably a reason that he keeps getting moved, is because teams acquire him because they want him as a third line or second line center. And then he kind of eventually, the coaches put him at the wing and they lose patience with him because maybe they don't see him really as a particularly good winger, but he's not a guy that they want to trust at center. And I feel like that's kind of a lot of what's been going on, especially in Pittsburgh. I think that they always wanted more from him offensively in terms of generating chances for his line mates. And he really isn't that guy. Like, he is kind of a generally speaking, a low event guy who has a good shot. And maybe that limits his upside. You know, maybe he's going to be their William Karlsson, like we alluded to before, or maybe he's going to be a decent second line winger or a good third line center. Or, you know, the real kind of benefit of Jared McCann is his versatility in the lineup. But I feel like it's also probably what has soured him for a lot of organizations. But I mean, like Ryan said, he's younger, he's better, and he's cheaper than Alex Kerfoot. So I don't know what made the Leafs, you know, under the impression that they were going to be losing him, or that he was, you know, worth dangling to protect Alex Kerfoot.
Well, that's the thing that's strange here, right? From the Leafs' perspective, like, it was a slam dunk, no brainer pick for Seattle as soon as he became available. But when they made that trade, you're like, okay, they're, you know, I assume they're going to go 7-3 here in terms of their protection and expose Justin Hull. And if you lose him, he's a valuable asset at $2 million as a second pairing guy, but more replaceable, or they're going to expose Alex Kerfoot. And instead, this wound up happening because they went 4-4 and exposed both guys. And clearly Seattle was going to take McCann. And then that was kind of the strange thing to me. Like, on the one hand, you could argue, all right, well, the Leafs lost a 7th round pick and Philip Hollander here. It's not the end of the world. If you look at what some other teams lost, it's a very palatable alternative, but it seems like it didn't need to go this way. And I wonder if they miscalculated it, or what the chain of events was that led to the ultimate outcome here.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard a lot of Leafs fans criticizing the organization by saying it's an endowment effect thing. And I think that if you look at, you know, Justin Hull's results, you know, he's kind of ultimately the guy, you know, more so than Kerfoot, who the Leafs did all of this maneuvering to try to protect. You know, they went 4-4 specifically so that they could keep him as their top four right defenseman. You know, I think that Hull's credentials as a top four defenseman are essentially he plays in the top four and doesn't immediately burst into flames when he's out there. You know, I don't think that he's a guy who you absolutely have to keep around. I mean, he's 29. He's fine. You know,
that's but the crazy thing to me, right? Like, everybody talks about him like, oh, Jonathan, he's got so much more to give. It's like, this dude's almost 30. Yeah. I don't get it from Toronto's perspective, where it's like, you trade it, like, because when they traded for Jared McCann, everybody's like, that's the Kerfoot insurance. They're just going to use him in Kerfoot's role. He's probably going to be really good playing behind Matthews and Tavares. And if they have to move him to the wing, they'll do it. And they were like, we actually would really like to protect our fourth best defenseman, who is eminently replaceable.
It's weird. It feels like people, just because I guess they have a significant part of their cap devoted to forwards, and you know they score flashy goals, it's like, oh, the Leafs are this all offense team that is set at forward and actually needs more defensemen. And it's like, they need more good forwards. If you look at what happened in the playoffs and how, like, obviously not having John Tavares hurt quite a bit, but like, they could really use a Jared McCann player on this roster. And so when they did acquire him, I was like, this is a really smart trade for them. And they gave up
almost nothing to get him. You're like, this is incredible. Great job by Toronto. And then they were like, yeah, we actually don't want this player at all.
Yeah. There was like a beautiful, like, 3-hour window where Leafs fans actually liked me again. And then they decided to just throw it all out for Justin Hull. And I'm really mad at Kyle Dubas for doing that.
Yeah.
He almost did me a huge solid.
There's still this Kyle Dubas only does the good trades. Lou Lamoriello still does the bad ones, right? Like, that's how we have to think about it.
Quickly on the Yarncroke thing, another smart pick by Seattle, 1 year left at $2 million. I believe pretty much like the type of winger. I don't think he's going to play center despite the team's needs. He's more of a winger at this point in his career, but the type of player everyone would want. I think if they want to flip him, they'll certainly have plenty of teams lining up for him. His defensive metrics last year were off the charts. He was fantastic. I thought the hilarious takeaway from this was that the Predators protected 3 forwards, and 2 of them were Luke Cunningham and Tanner Janot. Like, that was,
yeah.
I don't know. I think Nicholas Deslauriers still being protected was the craziest thing that I saw, but that was a close second in terms of going the 5 defensemen and 2 of those forwards being that. Like, if you're going to do that,
Tanner Janot is way more.
If you're going to do that, why are you panic trading Victor Arvidsson for 70 cents on the dollar 3 weeks ago? Like,
do you want to hear my theory? It's that the Predators do not know what they're doing. They have no idea what they want to do next season. They didn't know what they wanted to do last season. They should have blown it up, but then they got the hottest goaltending in the league for 3 weeks, and they said, you know what, we're all in, baby. We're gonna make a couple of trades at the deadline. We're going to lose in the first round. Nobody's going to be surprised. And then, they moved on from Ryan Ellis. And I don't know. I didn't really get that trade either for them. But, I just looked at that and I was like, yeah, they don't know what they have on this roster at all. They just know they don't want what it is.
Yeah, I can't imagine that anybody in that organization felt like proud when they submitted that list. Like, they're looking at the list of like, all right, we have one forward in the entire organization that is like an actual like proper impact forward that we don't want to give up. Everybody else, sure, fine, take them. Like, that, you know, I mean, like, the thing with it, with the Yarncroke pickup is that it's the smart pickup for Seattle, but I mean, like, it was the only not stupid pickup for Seattle. Like, I saw so many people in the past 5 days who had Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene confidently as their number one centers. And that never made an absolute lick of sense to me, unless, you know, David Poile realized that he was 73 years old and sent them their next 10 years of first round picks to get out of those deals. Like, I mean, that one was totally obvious to me from the jump, but apparently there was some consternation about whether or not that was actually going to be the case. But in any event, regardless of how Yarncroke plays, I think he fits the roster very well. He's clearly part of this philosophy of the group that they've put together. And I think that they'll be more than happy with him no matter where he fits in.
I agree. Jack, give me a couple of your most interesting picks for either good or bad reasons.
So, I mean, Vince Dunn is a guy who we've touched on a little bit. Another case where I think that there was a bit of a battle between the more highly priced name brand guy and a kind of lower in the lineup player. I've had so many St. Louis Blues fans come at me for, you know, presenting numbers that say that he is good at suppressing scoring chances, and they just send me YouTube compilations of him getting walked and turnovers and all this stuff. So I think more than anything, like, I am incredibly curious just to see him on a different team. Like, it really is one of those situations where I want to see if this is a legitimate situation where we've been missing something horrible about Vince Dunn this whole time, or whether it's going to be a thing where everybody in Seattle loves this guy and they're all buying his jersey and everything, and St. Louis Blues fans are saying, oh, well, he sucked when he was with us, but, you know, oh, now he's good. I guess he must have learned something from Mark Giordano or something.
Yeah. Tarasenko seemed like the no-brainer, especially when it was announced that he was going to be unprotected just based on name value. $7.5 million cap it for the next two seasons, makes $9.5 million in real dollars this year. And I don't really know how to evaluate him or moving forward, because he, in his prime, was clearly one of the most lethal and just consistently great goal scorers in the league, where year in and year out, you could just count on 30, 35 goals from him. Over the past 2 years, though, he's got 7 goals in his past 34 games over that stretch, shot 6.2% last year. And it's not like, oh, that's an outlier, he's going to bounce back, because you could, you know, argue that a big reason for that was because he has one functioning arm basically after all of his shoulder problems, and his shot profile changed in the process. And if he's not getting to the same areas and he doesn't have the same velocity and zip on his shot, then we shouldn't expect that to bounce back. And if that's the case, it's, you know, a real stay away in terms of the dollar hit. Now, you could argue that they could have taken him and potentially retained and flipped, because they're, whether it's Philly or the Islanders, I believe there will be teams that are interested in Tarasenko services and hoping that they can, you know, get him back into full goal scoring form. But I really thought, you know, just the way the discussion was framed in terms of like, oh, Vlad Tarasenko, you have to take him, was missing some really important context there.
Yeah. And I mean, this is kind of a fortunate situation for them, because unlike some other situations or other teams where they had quote unquote Tarasenko's available and they decided to take ECHLers, you know, they at least did get a legitimate, you know, defenseman with upside who I think that they'll be able to hopefully get some value out of. So yeah, that was definitely one that I found interesting. I think that the two free agents also, I was definitely taken aback by. I think one factor that I didn't really consider when I put together my mock team was the idea that they were going to be legitimately playing in free agency and putting together options like that. And then I think that the other one that maybe surprised me a little bit was taking on Jordan Eberle. I think that there was a lot of discussion around the fact that the Islanders were so clearly just desperately trying to get rid of cap space, you know, to the extent that they traded a pile of picks to Arizona to take on Andrew Ladd. And now, you know, we find out that, you know, they just have moved essentially a 31-year-old player who signed for 3 more years, making $5.5 million, and they're just able to unload that contract for free. I was very surprised that the Islanders were essentially able to get away with that, and that, you know, of all the that type of player that was available to Seattle, you know, Eberle was the guy in particular that they targeted. Even if I think that Eberle is a perfectly effective player, and I think that he's definitely going to be the most talented offensive player on this team.
See the condition for the third round pick that is going to Arizona in that Ladd trade?
Yeah,
and what the requirements are?
It was bizarre. It was, I might be getting it wrong, but it was either Ladd appears, they don't get the pick. Like, the Islanders don't have to give up the pick if Ladd appears in one game in 22-23.
So basically he can't retire, but he also can't play for them.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So it was like a situation of he just has to be LTIR'd. Is that
pretty much? I guess they could buy him out conceivably. I'm not sure what the details on that would be, but it was a very Lou move.
Bizarre.
I mean, I think the difference here is, so the Islanders shed like what, 15 or 16 million in cap commitments for next season. I think in Eberle's case, and listen, it was necessary because they're gonna have to pay Pelech. They're probably going to, I guess, bring back Sorokin, Beauvillier. They want to bring back Palmieri after the success he had for them, Cizikas. So they have a lot of money that they need to allocate moving forward. Eberle, though, like unlike those other two contracts that they moved, I think they really will miss him because aside from his strong underlying numbers, he's just a consistent goal scorer for a team that needs good it, right? Player. Like he had 14 5-on-5 goals last year, which were tied with Mark Stone, David Pastrnak, Braden Point, and Alex Ovechkin. Like he is a good player who clearly had success playing with Matt Barzal. And I guess they're thinking, okay, we can just play Leo Komarov and whoever else with Matt Barzal and get success out of them. But I think they needed to move the money, but it's not like they were just moving a bunch of dysfunctional money and all of a sudden they're going to be better off for it. Like, I think it's going to be tough for them to replace that even with the 5.5 million they've cleared now.
Yeah. The Islanders going, you know what? We lost a guy who had 14, 5-on-5 goals. We have enough other guys who can put the puck in the net that will be fine. It's like, no, you're the New York Islanders. Like the Eberle thing, I get obviously why they exposed him and that sort of thing. But this seemed like another thing of like, we dare you to take Jordan Eberle instead of Josh Bailey. You won't do it. And they're like, you're right. We're going to take Jordan Eberle, the guy who is good.
Yeah. And then they brought him out in a Kraken jersey. Yeah.
And you know, he's another guy, really... This is the other thing I kind of noted is that like a really likable player, like fun to watch and just seems to have like a bit of a personality in a league where that's at a premium, I think you would say.
The second oldest player behind Mark Giordano, but only has 3 years on his deal. I think it's, not prohibitive enough that, and clearly they felt it wasn't, but all right, my big talking point here is what they decided to do in net with the goalie options. And the pro is they have less than $5 million in cap commitments on the three guys they took, which is great because I think all three of us agree that it's the most volatile or least predictable position. And while it's obviously very important, any of these guys could wind up being really good. And so I'd rather go this route than investing whatever absurd amount of money it would have taken to bring Carey Price aboard. No, at the same time, though, these three goalies have 77 career NHL starts combined. And I thought that, the Driedger one makes plenty of sense. I thought even the Vanacek one makes sense. I was very surprised that they didn't take Kaapo Kähkönen from the Minnesota Wild.
Agreed.
I was also moderately surprised, I guess, when they realized they could sign Jamie Oleksiak, they decided to go that route. But I would have even potentially medicals... we need to see the medicals. They need to be approved, but maybe even give Ben Bishop a shot, given how low of a commitment that is over the 2 years. But we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of big name goalies that are going to be available this offseason, especially in the free agent market. And if they have the cap space, they could be an interesting fit for high cap hit, low term on a bunch of those guys. And so maybe they'll go that route to bring in someone who's a bit more reliable. But it's a risk, but at the same time, we've talked about the defensive metrics that we expect on this team, and it might just be fine. And if Chris Drieger is legit, all of a sudden you have a great deal on him and he can play a bunch more games and you're going to be set. So I think it was the most interesting talking point for me just because it fits in. It's like very on brand with this team in terms of like, I'm interested, but ultimately it could wind up not being nearly as good as we think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I too was pretty surprised, that Kähkönen didn't get picked. Carson Soucy, I don't really have a strong feeling about one way or the other. He's like in his mid to late 20s. He's fine. I think that these were the three best goalies you could get. How do I want to say this? Like if you're like, yeah, goaltending's whatever happens, like these are the three best guys you can get at that price point. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then, yeah, it frees up money to do whatever else you want to, including go out and get a goal. Like there are going to be five or six teams in November who are like, please take our overly expensive backup goalie because we have this other guy who's just better.
What do you think about the situation, Jack?
Yeah, I mean, I like Chris Drieger. You know, obviously he lights up all my charts bright blue because he's played like five games and had five shutouts in them. You know, I think that it's obviously rolling the dice. You know, you look at the comparables for Drieger based on what he's done so far, and you know, you see some somewhat encouraging names like Anton Hudobin and Martin Jones. You know, I guess early Martin Jones, we'll say. And then you see others like, you know, Scott Darling, that I you know, if you're talking about 26-year-old goalies who have had really great results in tiny sample sizes who get signed to multi-year deals by Ron Francis, it's kind of hard not to think about
what a niche market
in that case. Yeah, exactly. I think I'm pretty sure it's only two guys, but I don't quote me on that. But I mean, it's exactly what Ryan said. You know, they were in a position where they basically had two roads to take. They could lock themselves into Carey Price and, you know, sell a couple extra jerseys, which apparently is the most important thing that any team can possibly do when building for the future. Or they could just give themselves maximum flexibility. And it seems like that's what they did. So I don't have any issues with how they approach the goaltending. And if everything goes completely south, I don't think it's the end of the world. And if it works out, you know, any of those three guys theoretically could end up being legitimate goalies because it's goaltending. Who knows what's going to happen? So, Kakanen was a little bit unexpected, but I do feel the need to give Carson Soucy a shout out for leading all defensemen in PDO in the past two seasons combined with like a 105.9 or something.
The things he does well.
That seems like a good thing to target. Him and Jonas Donskoy's shooting percentage last season. Exactly. May I interest the two of you in a 27-year-old defenseman who posted a league worst 36% on ice expected goal share last year and quite visibly dragged down every single person's numbers that he shared any ice time with?
You mean the guy who's going to fix my Seattle war roster builder projections by putting him on the second pair?
Right.
I think I might just skip fixing the model and just do it by putting him there. Yeah, also worth pointing out, the son of Paul McDermott, who played with Ron Francis on the Hartford Whalers in the late 80s. If anybody was wondering for some...
There's always baseball. One, right? There's always one where it's like, oh, you know, he's been to Seattle twice. So this is the connections have always been there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, ultimately, like, it's not going to make or break them. It wasn't a great list to choose from. It's like, oh, they missed out on Blake Lizotte and Cale Clegg or Carl Grundstrom. But that one was a weird one. I thought the Gavin Bayreuther pick from Columbus was a bit wild, considering he's a 27-year-old UFA with 28 career games to his name. Similarly, I think kind of what we talked about with Tarasenko, like initially it was like, whoa, of course they're going to take Max Domi. And then immediately, whenever you talk to anyone in the league, they'd be like, yeah, they're definitely not taking him because he might be out for the first half of the season and who knows what he's going to look like at that point. And they might not even be able to flip him. So it's just not worth it. But I thought whether it was Dean Kukan, I heard a lot of smoke around him or Kevin Stenlund, who I'm interested in. I thought there was like, they could have at least gotten an interesting young player in return. And instead they went this route. And that was like, when we find out that there was no side deals to take Gavin Bayreuther, it's like they intentionally did so. Like this was their own doing. I found that one to be very bizarre.
Gavin Bayreuther, now that I think about it, let me look this up really fast. But a classic guy who was like 23 years old playing college hockey and looked incredible, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to say around that time, there was some pretty serious interest in him from Carolina. I think he ultimately signed with Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. But like, I feel like I had heard that Carolina was like, damn, this kid rocks. And it makes sense. He was a high scoring defenseman in college hockey. So that's the kind of guy Carolina likes.
Well, speaking of Carolina, the geeky pick, that one for me, and less to do with the player himself, because I do think he has an interesting profile. I just thought whether it was, you know, Jake Bean in terms of upside / potentially being a trade chip for them, or Nino Niederreiter similarly as a trade chip with only the 1 year left in his deal. I thought like it was a kind of a coin flip between those two, but there was no other options. And then they just came sort of out of left field with geeky. And I imagine the Hurricanes themselves are very happy with that being the outcome, so they can keep both of those two other players instead.
Yeah, and you know, there have been rumors for weeks that Warren Fogle wants out, and now maybe he doesn't is the latest I think I've heard.
I mean, clearly the guy just doesn't like Kiki. I think that's the only thing that we can possibly take away from that. I mean, Carolina and Columbus are kind of the two teams where I thought they had a pretty straightforward, you know, take him and flip him player on the table, and they decided to go with the, okay, maybe this guy will compete for the first call up spot, or in Geeky's case, you know, maybe he'll be a fourth liner on this team. I mean, just strange, kind of two situations where it really seems like, okay, there has to be some kind of side deal going on here. And then the dust settles and it's like, oh no, they just really liked, I'm not even going to say his last name. Gavin, whatever.
Gavin Bayreuther.
Bayreuther. Very good.
Hey, you better get to know that name.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's, but yeah, I mean, like the thing with Domi was a little strange to me, because like I was hearing all the same things that you were about, you know, well, they're maybe looking at Stenlund, or they're looking at Kukan, or whoever it is. The Domi thing is kind of strange to me, because, you know, I mean, he's going to be in surgery. I think he's projected to be out until like November, you know. I mean, so is Kelly Yarncroak. They both have the same term left on their contract. I would have imagined that the upside of maybe having a couple, even just a couple weeks, where you take Max Domi out of the John Tortorella Columbus system and let him just kind of be the pure offense guy that he clearly has been for his entire career, might have been worth something. But yeah, I it's the same thing with Nino Niederreiter. It's like, here's your rental. Obviously a rental. Obviously we'll get you a second or third round pick at least. And they just say, no, we're going to get our fourth line center of the future. Which, you know, I guess speaks to the kind of team they're trying to build.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there were a number of those choices. So it'll be interesting to see I'm sure there's going to be more news to come out of this, but I think we did the best we could here in terms of what we know now. Was there any other notes on the expansion draft or decisions or players involved or anything that either of you wanted to get to while we're still here?
Yeah. I did want to touch a little bit more on the whole Carey Price thing. What was that all about?
Oh, finally, a hockey program that's going to talk about Carey Price to Seattle.
I know, like, I get it, but like, I just, did people really think Seattle was going to take Carey Price, knowing that he may miss a good chunk of time next season, knowing what the cap commitment would be, knowing that it's an analytically inclined organization, and the analytics people would be like, Carey Price is not worth anywhere near what he's getting paid. Like, that would just be, oh, what do you, like, you walk down the hall, what do you guys think of this Carey Price thing? They go, no, and you close the door. Like, that's the end of the discussion.
Yeah, I mean, Carey Price's dad didn't even play for the Carolina Hurricanes in the late 1990s, so that angle doesn't even make sense.
I really thought they'd take Deneau from Montreal and do kind of what they did with Alexiak, but that was a rumor that got shot down yesterday. So,
and try to give up negative goals next season.
They might do it.
I mean, here's the thing. I didn't buy for a second that they were actually considering Price. I think Elliot Friedman was reporting about how they're sort of trying to play a game of chicken and see if they could squeeze anything out of Marc Bergevin to stay away from Price. And he was the wrong GM to be trying to play that game with. And he played this very well, where he got to keep Allen and basically gave away a player that I think he's very comfortable giving away in this process. But I mean, come on, like, Price is owed $13 million, I think, in real salary next season. His signing bonus hasn't been paid out yet. He has a full no move clause, even if he got taken, $10.5 million in the cap commitments over the next five seasons, not to mention the fact that he hasn't been the goalie he was this past postseason at any point over the past couple of regular seasons. Like, it was a fun story, and I think it would have been a very chaotic outcome, and Twitter would have been amazing if it actually had happened. But I don't know, maybe it's a cynical part of me, but I didn't for a second actually let myself believe that they were really entertaining the idea of taking Carey Price in this draft.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I mean, one thing I think that, you know, if we just back up and just kind of appreciate that this is presumably the last expansion draft that we're going to get for quite a long time, I think part of the entertainment value of the entire thing was just that this was just an explicit moment that you don't usually see, where you just have two opposing organizations clearly just playing competing insiders against each other. Like, it was just this kind of weekend long game of chess where the, you know, people that were kind of, you know, Habs beat reporters or maybe, you know, Montreal adjacent were reporting about all these injuries and he's going to have to go to the doctor because his arm has fallen off and all this stuff. And then 2 hours later, you would hear, oh, well, Seattle is actually, you know, they're looking into the finances and the owner's giving them the sign off. And it just basically went back and forth like that for 3 different days. I do appreciate that we just got to see, you know, all the kind of behind the scenes machinations that you get a little bit of, especially during like RFA negotiations. Mm-hmm. But it was just kind of two competing teams just right out there in the open for like 5 days.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, so let's put a bow on it. Let's summarize our general sort of tenor or tone or feeling heading out of this. I think it sounds like we're all sort of, you know, a little bit underwhelmed, feel like they could have been more ambitious, but at the same time, leaving the door open to see what's to come, and also realizing that, you know, they did some good stuff as well. Like, I feel like it could have been better, but also like there weren't any necessarily catastrophic picks where you're like, what was going on here? Like, even the questionable names where the alternatives weren't so good that they missed out on anything big.
Yeah, it's about, I feel like for the most part, you know, it's about what I expected.
I think it'll be a pretty good team.
Yeah. Like I say, I think I, barring, you know, a total goaltending meltdown, or just like, they don't have a single guy who can put the puck in the net. This feels like a bubble team to me in that division. At a minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would have been kind of hard for them not to be, admittedly, but
yeah,
I mean, like the thing is that, like, I feel like if they weren't going to go the star power route, which they obviously didn't, like they passed on Price and Tarasenko and all those options. You know, they definitely went the likable route for marketing. Like, I don't think this team is going to have any problem marketing this group of players. Like, they're going to be fun to watch. They're going to be hardworking. You know, there's going to be, you know, double digits of fan favorites. So I think overall, if this team is bad, it's going to at least be bad in kind of a respectable and enjoyable way. And if they're good, then it's found money, and they definitely have some good and interesting pieces on this team.
All right. I like it. Sounds like we're in agreement. Plug some stuff. Ryan, you can go first, and then Jack, you can jump in after. What are you working on these days? Where can people check you out?
Tomorrow I will be writing my monthly Power Feelings column for EP Rinkside, right. And I will also be recording just in time for the transaction embargo to not lift. We will be recording the latest episode of Puck Soup, so you'll just get to hear me say all this stuff again. Boy, wow, crazy. That we don't know what they're going to do yet.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah. Well, there's only one hockey podcast.
I'll get to have a Zach Hyman take, I guess.
Yeah.
The Oilers shouldn't do this.
Well, there it is. You're assuming that Frank Cervelli isn't going to leak every single trade that's going to happen.
You know what?
During the episode.
Fingers crossed. We need the content.
I'm going to plug a little site called EP Rinkside. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but
no.
Pretty good. It has a handful of pretty good writers on it. I'm going to be writing what was supposed to be a free agency preview of Zach Hyman. It might have to be a free agency reflection of Zach Hyman, depending on when it drops tomorrow. He's a good player. I don't know if he's a 7-year good player. I feel
maybe
like
eight.
Could be eight.
Maybe eight. Could be eight. I you know what? I feel like it would draw more eyes to the article if it's eight. So let's pray for that. And you can just find me on Twitter at JFreshHockey. Going to be doing obviously a whole lot of stuff for the upcoming free agent frenzy. But I was very glad that all of this stuff dropped earlier today, so I could basically take the afternoon off and spend it outside instead of anticipating dropping 30 player cards in 15 minutes.
I like it. Well, great job, guys. I appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to quickly plug some stuff myself so that I don't have to record a separate outro. Please go rate and review the PDO cast. It's greatly appreciated. If you want to prep for Friday's entry draft, we did a mock draft with Chris Peters and Cam Robinson recently on the PDO cast. Also, our website, which we've talked about a couple times now, EP Rinkside, has the best draft guide in the game to help prep you for it. I believe if you use the promo code draft guide in all caps, it gives you 3 free months off an annual subscription, and you get access to the work of all 3 of us. So please go check that out if you haven't done so already. And enjoy the upcoming transactions and the entry draft. And We will be back with a PDO cast soon, and we'll be back with each of you soon as well on the PDO cast. So thanks for listening. Thanks for the two of you for coming on the show, and enjoy.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks.
The Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich. Follow on Twitter at Dim Filipovich and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/hockeypdocast.